Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. So as you know, 2 years ago, I became a dad, and becoming a dad was the best thing I've ever done in my life. I'm happy I waited till now because I don't think I would have been the best possible father early in my life, especially in my 20s. But, you know, there's something about having a kid that if you accept the invitation from that, there is an opportunity to hold yourself to a much deeper level of integrity. And I think children, even if they're not yours, can be a great motivation to really step into your power and your potential because your life is the lesson to them. The way you show up is the demonstration of what's possible. And I always think about that when I'm considering what is the, not just what I say I stand for, but what do I actually stand for? What do my behaviors and choices represent? And through the process of becoming a father, like one of the most incredible parts of it has been learning about birth, learning about the medicalization of birth, learning about how powerful women are as mothers during the delivery process. Like everything about it was so insane to me in the best possible way. And you know, being that I was more in the medical world previously, I was in pharma for 14 years. It's so interesting to when we were learning about birth and going to the pre-birth classes, the place we went was in Las Vegas. And the midwives were all labor and delivery nurses too. So we had this great contrast of the two worlds. They lived in both worlds. And the way that they presented everything was, here's what's going to be suggested. Here's the history of birth. Here's what the data shows. What would you like to choose? And that way you're educated so you can advocate for yourself. But what I kept finding, which is, fuck it, it happens to me every time I'm learning about this type of shit, is that I was like, holy crap, there's so many lies in this world. Like there's so much bullshit in the medical world. And look, I see the value of medicine. I see the value of acute medicine. I see the value of treatments. We can live in this world of both and, that there is both value there and there is also corruption. There is also misrepresentation. There is also profit steering by creating guidelines. I mean, I was in that world. I worked with people to shape guidelines and policy and hospital stuff and all that kind of stuff. And so I was again sort of taken aback by it. And so if you are a mother and a father, or you know someone who's about to be one, or you're about to be one, or you're passionate about that world, you're curious about even your experience as a child being born. When I learned that a lot of our pain is pre-verbal, so we don't actually have the words to explain what's happening in our physical experience. So grief can come forward for us that we can't label. We don't know where it comes from. And a lot of that can be from when we were before we had language, when we were the age where we didn't have language. So we don't have words for it because we didn't yet have words. And that's why crying is so important. That's why letting these feelings move through your body. And the reason I bring up birth and the remembering of traumas and experiences from your child and learning about your birth and learning, like for me, for example, I was breastfed till I was 3 months. And then I lost that connection to my mother. And medicine taught my mom that formula was better for me than breast milk. I mean, come on, everybody. You have to be on crazy pills to think that, you know, Nestle is making something better for you with high fructose corn syrup than freaking your mom's milk that adjusts the combinations to actually give you antibodies if you need them. It changes the composition of the milk based on what stage you're at in development. Like it's bananas. It's a customized milk making machine that is built for you, not to mention it's good for bonding, etc. So I remember being at this meditation where in the meditation, they said, go back to the moment of your original fracture or your original wound. And I remember thinking, I know where that is. I was thinking of betrayal when I was 19. And then the person facilitating it said, don't go where you think you should go. And I was like, whoa, oh damn, they're on to me. And then all of a sudden I was transported. It was crazy. I was in this meditation. I was transported to seeing my mother being taken away from me. And I was a baby. I could tell it was like in a hospital. And then I texted my dad because I knew my dad would get back to me right away. And I was like, Dad, how long was I in the NICU? Because I was preemie, 5 weeks. And he was like, my dad's great. He was like, oh, you were born to two, you know, very loving parents. You spent 10 days in the NICU under tremendous care at the blah, blah, blah hospital. And when we got you after those 10 days, two very eager parents picked you up in their arms. And I was like, I love my dad because he's like really trying to use all the language to minimize, to know that I'm loved, which is really beautiful. And I was like, okay, 10 days. I was away from mom for 10 days. Now, what happened for 3 months straight after that is I would just cry randomly. Randomly. I remember saying to Kylie, my wife, when we were dating then, I was like, I don't even know what I'm sad about. I would just start crying. And I just had this overwhelming grief, and it took about 3 months for it to move through me. And so I say all of this because it all begins with birth. It begins with how we're brought into the world. And the most important part of that process is the journey with mom. And of course, that's a lot of pressure on mothers. I acknowledge that. I see that because we don't support mothers. We've taught mothers that to be afraid of birth. And I'm not saying there are not acute reasons for interventions that increase the survival of both. Again, we're not living in binaries anymore. I don't fucking have space for that bullshit that you're either for it or against it. No, there can be value in many things. But what I do know is that if we can empower mothers, and we can empower fathers and mothers together to have the most tremendous, most powerful, most real birth, most natural, I guess is the right word, then it can completely change society. So with all that said, I'm so excited for today's guest, who is like at the top of the game of midwifery. She is a voice, an advocate. She's a lactation specialist. She's a doula. She's all the things. And she's an incredible teacher. And so this is a cannot miss episode because it will completely change your perspective on birth, but it will also empower you to have knowledge beyond most people about that process. And especially if you're about to give birth or planning to give birth in the future, oh man, it's going to make you a fierce advocate for the majestic, miraculous nature that is birth. That is women, that is the portal. So before we dive into today's episode, make sure you hit that like button on this video because then it gets into other people's eyes and ears. Also hit subscribe button so you don't miss any future episodes. And let's dive in. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. I feel like I'm calling in from a boxing studio. And in the white corner, Lindsay Milas. Hello.
Hey. Wow, the crowd goes wild.
What would be your entry song?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. You know, I think the default for everybody is like the Rocky song, but I think I need something more than that.
Yeah, I think you have to get more creative.
Yeah.
That's my constructive feedback. You can't use the same song as Rocky.
No, I'd have to think about that one.
But to be fair, with the way that you confront the subjects of the world, I could see you running up some stairs with some dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. So I'm excited to have you here because you are a truth sharer, truth seeker, all the things. So maybe before we get kicking, you could share with the audience where you come from, what you do, why you do it.
Yeah. So I am currently in Orange County, California. And I have been in the birth field for close to 21 years now. I started very young in my career working in the medical field and found my way to the birth field through my own traumatic birth itself. So I had, you know, every intervention under the sun, ended up with a C-section, and really left that experience reeling, feeling like I was robbed of a rite of passage, although I didn't quite, you know, consider it a rite of passage at that time. But my innate knowing knew that there was something that was missing. And so I finagled around with different things within the birth world and finally eventually led myself to become a midwife. And I think really more so it found me. It's a calling. It's not a career by any means. And it's ended me up here, you know, witnessing thousands of women give birth over the last 20 years and really having earth-shattering, heart-expanding, full divinity within the room experiences that just leave me in complete awe and also leave me pissed that so many women don't get to experience that and not even know that it's an option to have such an expansive experience while giving birth. And, you know, it's really led me to the truth of so many different things, which span across so many different fields of medicine. And it's not just birth. You know, once you realize the deception that happens within the birth place, you realize that it's this deception that happens across most of Western medicine. And so, you know, before we hit record, I was saying that I found you because I was so proud of somebody speaking the truth, and really like using their voice in a good way during 2020. And it's just such a pleasure to be here with you and really move through different things within the birth world that some of your listeners might not know.
Well, thank you so much for that. I appreciate that. I receive it. Because when you're in it and you're just getting a cascade of, you know, the loudest voices often being the most oppositional, you don't realize. I just recognized there was like, am I crazy? Like, am I crazy that I feel like I'm being objective in this? I'm consuming the data. I'm studying. I'm learning. Wow, how is this not being talked about? But then knowing that being in integrity with truth is more important than anything. But yeah. This is the, you know, we gave birth to our son 15 months ago, Jasper. And before that, we had trainings, like pre-birth trainings with both, they were midwives who were previously labor and delivery nurses.
Okay.
So I really liked that because the mergers of my worlds have been this sort of linear world with the esoteric, I was in pharma, I like psychology, but I like spirituality. And I think psychology is often the sort of more scientific effort at making the spiritual make sense. So when I started to study birth for the necessity of being at Kylie's side during that, I was very interested because a lot of the classes were, here's what they recommend. Here's what the science actually says. Mm-hmm. And I was like, those are not correlated. Not what the midwives recommend, but what hospitals recommend.
Yeah, of course.
Was disconnected from the actual deeper data. So maybe let's just start there. And I don't even know because I'm sure there's a lot, but where do you get drawn to from that?
Oh my gosh, there's so many things. The disconnect within the system. I mean, really what it boils down to is that it's a system based completely in liability control. You know, we move through the system with them trying to avoid lawsuits at every corner, but what they're doing in the way that they're practicing is causing poor outcomes and it's causing poor satisfaction rates. So, you know, when you look at the data, like even just something as simple as fetal monitoring, we know that it hasn't improved fetal outcomes in the time that we've been using it over the last 30 to 40 years, but it's something that's used almost continuously for most women that enter into a hospital situation. And in a home birth setting, we have the opportunity to check baby's heart rate. It's kind of what's standard of care. We have little handheld Dopplers that we can check baby's heart rate with what's called intermittent monitoring, where usually in the hospital setting, it's more of a continuous monitoring, especially if you have Pitocin or an epidural. And, you know, like our C-section rates are way less than a hospital. Is it because of that? Maybe one of the factors, but you even look at what the World Health Organization says with what the cesarean rate should be in the United States. And it really shouldn't be above 10 to 15% at the most. You look at most hospitals, I mean, some hospitals, Orange County hospitals can go anywhere up to 50%. The nationwide average is like 30 to 33%. So that's more than double what the World Health Organization is saying is reasonable. And I'm talking about the World Health Organization, which most of us know have crazy guidelines with them themselves. So, you know, when you have an agency like that that's saying something and we're so vastly off, it's just obvious that there's something that is severely wrong. And, you know, I come on the tidal wave of, I'm sure most of you guys have heard of Ricky Lake. She was a famous talk show host that had a beautiful, blissful, expansive water birth and created a documentary with her friend Abby Epstein. And they really took the the world by storm. It's 16 years ago now that that film came out. And I feel like there was this tidal wave that happened with women waking up and realizing that they had options. And so when, you know, you realize that there's options and sometimes what we're doing isn't necessarily what's based in science, then we have the opportunity to kind of take a step back and digest what some of that information is. COVID was the huge push over that, you know, like we were like kind of riding on this wave in with all this information out there. And then there was women that were possibly not going to be able to birth with their husbands or partners present in the room with all the COVID restrictions at the peak of the time that nobody really knew what was going on. The shock and awe campaign, if you will. And it's been really interesting to watch people wake up within that sense too, post 2020, because there's so many people that are having a complete distrust within the system altogether, but now so applying that over to the birth world. So it's interesting to have these worlds collide. And, you know, it's interesting to see how they collided for you as well.
If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you already know how much I rave about Cozy Earth. And my wife and I aren't just in love with their sheets. We're actually hooked on their loungewear, too. I mean, everything they make is insanely comfortable. We can't stop talking about their waffle knit collection. Pants, tees, and Henleys, they're all the perfect mix of comfort and style. And let me tell you, these waffle knits are a total game changer. They're incredibly cozy and soft, and they're made from an eco-friendly blend of bamboo viscose that feels amazing against your skin. But it's not just about the comfort. These pieces are breathable, they're temperature regulating, so they keep you feeling fresh and cool no matter how long you wear them. They're lightweight, not heavy or hot, and perfect for lounging around the house, working from home, or even running errands. Honestly, you can wear them anywhere. And here's the best part. Cozy Earth is offering an exclusive 40% off discount just for my listeners. So whether you're looking to upgrade your loungewear or treat yourself to the most luxurious sheets ever, and I mean that, you'll save big. All you have to do is head to CozyEarth.com and use the code MARK at checkout. Trust me, once you try their waffle knit collection and any of their other amazing products, you will see why I'm obsessed with this company. Don't wait. Go to CozyEarth.com, use the code MARK, and enjoy 40% off everything. You deserve to feel this good every single day.
Yeah, I mean, having worked in pharma for so many years, and then, you know, the first time that I ever really saw that there was deception, and I was actually part of the deception, mm-hmm. was in the world of cholesterol. So, you know, I got to tell you, before 2020, I didn't think that the level of deception was as massive as it actually can be. And then, you know, just by design, I hadn't studied birth before because I hadn't needed to. Mm-hmm. And again, it was like, oh my God, like so much of what we're taught is bullshit. And mm-hmm. we know that that's true within food.
Yeah.
Because, you know, look at what they've recommended for diet, et cetera. Yeah. And like the type of food they're willing to let be on the market that we put in our bodies that then create, you know, put us in the circumstances of the highest amounts of obesity, type mm-hmm. 2 diabetes, like so much vascular issues, mm-hmm. all of that. So as you dove deeper into the experience that you had getting a C-section, and this sounds like a, you know, a traumatic birth experience, to really diving deeper into learning about birth, what were some of the things that you were most shocked about?
I always have been a seeker. So I've always been, you know, searching for the truth of things. And once I really started to dive in, I wasn't necessarily shocked. I wouldn't say that shocked is the right word. I was more surprised at how many people had been hoodwinked about an experience that would stay with them the rest of their life, about an experience that was literally the first initiation into parenthood. You know, you're an expert on attachment, and we look at how these women are basically being bribed to deny their intuition and be completely detached from what their innate knowing to protect their children would be with so many of the just normal routine procedures that are done. You look at, you know, even just the baby bassinets that are in the room with the mom in the hospital. And it's a great place to change the diaper. But anytime that you're holding that baby, nurses will walk in and say, you need to put the baby back in the bassinet. You can't sleep with the baby. you know, let us take the baby to the nursery. When we were growing up as babies, we never even were with our parents in the room at that point. Now they're really pushing rooming in and that golden hour, but there's so many pieces that are lost. And so I look at it from the perspective where I always say that the foundation of how I started my midwifery practice was through the Association of Pre and Perinatal Psychology and Health, APPA. It's a fantastic organization. They have tons of resources on their website at birthpsychology.org. And I think it was just the disconnect of across species of how something that's so primal, if we look at any mammal that gives birth, most of the time, unless they're in a zoo or in a farm, they don't really have the separation that we have as humans. And so when you look at that, it just led into so many of the interventions that caused that. And it was just mind-blowing to me, not only that it's commonly practiced, but nobody questions it.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that we've taken something that is biologically and evolutionarily curated and created to be a finite and as successful as possible, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
I think I speak for both of us when I say there's obviously acute reasons for intervention that are helpful and
have
been productive.
To which we're so grateful for. Like that's not what we're here to say. Like, thank goodness that there's hospitals and doctors that are skilled in emergency deliveries if needed.
Right. Well, and even your mention of the C-section rates, I remember learning in ours in Nevada is where we gave birth. The C-section rate was, I want to say something like 36%.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how in the UK, midwives sort of curate birth and the C-section rate was something like 1.9%.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know the C-section rate exactly, but I know it's much lower than the United States. And then you talk to midwives that are outside of the system within the UK system, and they still squawk at how horrible the system is. So, you know, it's like, where's the happy medium? You look also at places like Brazil. I mean, Brazil has a C-section rate of like 85% in the main cities. You know, it's like, where is the disconnection? Where are we going wrong? I think that, it could have changed, but I know that it is the plastic surgery capital of the world. And I think that there is this, you know, kind of like go in, have your baby, schedule your tummy tuck, you know, bounce out of there looking like you never had a baby. And it's like, why? You're not the same person after you have a baby. Why would you want to, you know, disconnect and have massive surgery? Cesarean is major abdominal surgery. You have to recover from surgery along with taking care of a newborn. So if you get a pick, why would you desire that? And so it's just this disconnect as humans that we've had, that we've moved so far away from what's biologically correct in our bodies to just trust that we can just schedule something and have our babies taken from us is like kind of like a scene from WALL-E to me in my mind, you know, not that it's in there, but it should have been.
That sterilization of birth, that sterilization, even of the story, it just is so apropos to our culture. It's like,
yes.
How do we create an intervention that makes life less inconvenient when that inconvenience of birth, and I'm a dude, so I recognize that me having the conversation about this is different than a woman having the conversation about it. But my experience as a man in the room with my wife giving birth was like, holy shit, this woman is a powerhouse. And I think, you know, I know that the preface of the conversation that we're having, maybe we should have had before, is that this is a triggering subject, because when we recognize the truth about these things, it brings up the cognitive dissonance that we've been deceived and that maybe we were robbed of the actual authentic experience, the sacred experience, as you're talking about, of the initiation. And even the idea of an initiation is foreign from our culture. So how do women experience the information that you share, and what do you recommend in order to hold that dissonance?
I think it's actually important first to look at kind of the history of how we even got here, right? Because for all of time, we gave birth in caves. You know, we were in community. We sat around a fire and listened to our aunties and our mothers and our sisters talk about birth. We had the sacred red tents where we would gather when we were menstruating. And we're storytellers. That's humans are storytellers. We thrive on sitting in community. And so what happened is, you can look back as far back as like 1400. Anytime that you're trying to decipher through any recorded information that goes far back, it's like, okay, what's the truth? What's not the truth? But there was a book that was written in the late 1400s that was called the Malus Malficarium, and it was translated into the Witch's Hammer. And it was widely dispersed by the Catholic Church. And it directly says in there, the greatest threat to the Catholic Church is midwives. I mean, that statement right there alone shows you that midwives have always been the wise woman, the medicine woman of the community. We've always been there from cradle to grave, from womb to tomb. And we helped families, we helped women through these transitions of life, be it birth, be it puberty, be it, you know, perimenopause, menopause, be it the standing and holding of you as a child passes or a spouse passes. You know, there's so many of these things that integrate into what the true definition of midwife is, in my opinion, the OG family physician. And so if you have, who was very much in power at that time, the Catholic Church saying the greatest threat to this religion is midwives, then we have to take a step back and say, why? Why were we the greatest threat to the Catholic Church? And where I draw my conclusions from it is every time that I step into a birth, every time that I'm invited into a birth space where I've been in this relationship building over the last 40 weeks with my clients. I inherently know them. I feel like every time that they come in to meet with me for their prenatal appointments, I'm having coffee with a girlfriend. I know their dark secrets. I know their spaces of vulnerability. And I step into this space where they're the most vulnerable they'll ever be in their life, arguably. You know, like maybe you could compare it to somebody in some sort of an ayahuasca ceremony or something like that. But again, let's go back to the word ceremony there. Birth is ceremony. And so when I step into that space, I feel like I'm actually in the space of divinity. I feel like I am at a bridge, a door where I'm actually witnessing heaven connect to earth, which is something that's kind of taboo to even talk about nowadays because spirituality is either so far out there or it's completely shut out. And I think what happened is the Catholic priests recognized that the midwives were bearing witness to this divinity and recognizing what power and truth was happening to these women in this time. And they knew that if that continued on, that they would have power to basically retaliate against what the church was saying. And so that was the beginning of the witch trials. You know, if you had a birthmark, you were burned at the stake to see if you were a witch. Like,
really?
Yeah. If you read through all the recollections of the witch trials, so many women were murdered. I mean, there was some towns and villages where there was really like one or two women left within the village. And so we get to take a step back and also say that, like, if we bring forward the truth of this divinity and people recognize the sacred event of what it is, and I'm not saying, listen, if you had a scheduled C-section, it can still be holy and sacred. Like, that's not what I'm here to say. But when you stand in your power and you really get to open a portal within yourself and birth another human being, that will set you up for the rest of your life in parenting that child and making decisions for that child and your family and recognizing that your intuition is the most important piece of raising that child. And when you start with the intuition being the biggest piece of raising that child, then you eliminate going and running to a doctor for every question that you have. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's the weaving of those worlds where we get to say, like, yes, we're really grateful and thankful that this is available to us if we need it. But for us to honor the rite of passage of birth, we really need to demedicalize it.
Yeah, I recognize that there is a, there's something that is cultivated when you're about to have a child. And I think the difference, I cannot, and I remember our midwife said this to us, that a woman becomes a mother the day she's pregnant. A father doesn't become a father till he holds the child, just because I'm not in relationship with the growth of him, right? I can witness it, but the womb growing and all that kind of stuff. But there is something about becoming a parent that is, it's asking whether we accept that invitation or even recognize it, because so many of us are culturally taught to give up the advocacy, to trust, quote unquote, trust the experts, which is such a weaponized term now. But it's like we've been so infantilized in the power structures of pretty much everything that we don't even recognize the power we have, but we're also robbed of the information that would create the confidence for advocacy. And it was really interesting to experience our midwives empowering us to make choices, having recommendations, but still saying, like, the choice is yours. And
how beautiful, if any medical professional was ever to say the choice is yours. Here's what I think. Here's what the research, quote unquote, research. I mean, what, I don't even know if I trust that term anymore. But here are your choices, and you get to make the decision for what's right for you and your family. Like, what a shift in the medical paradigm. That would make, that would change everything within the walls of Western medicine. It's so expansive and so huge, but so simple.
Yeah. And it's empowering. It's saying, like, you are in charge of your vessel. And, you know, we spew terms like my body, my choice, but only under certain conditions when it's a certain way. And that's why I find that term is like, oh, there's caveats to people standing for this. When, you know, how are there caveats to having autonomy over your body? And really where I was going with that is there is some sort of fuel that is rarely available, but will invite someone to step into advocacy to protect the life of their child. And it doesn't really matter at what point we wake up to needing that. But I don't think there's, like, if someone wanted to do something to my kid and take away my choice, I'm afraid of what I would find within myself. And when you talk about the history of medicine and the history of birth and connecting that to the burning of the witches, how do you see the evolution of the medicalization of birth? And, like, where does that even begin?
Yeah, so that's really interesting too, because when we were kind of in this, like, Victorian era and moving into really to be, like, fully conservative as females, we didn't want to, you know, be vulnerable and raw and exposed. And so, you know, birth started kind of taking place behind a sheet, and it was done to us, not, you know, like we weren't doing it. And, you know, in the early 1900s, 100% of birth was at home. So when people say, like, you know, home birth is a trend, you're like, hello, it's been around for all of time. Like, you know, hospital birth is a trend at this point. And we moved into the feminist movement. And the feminist movement really was saying that, you know, we get to be empowered and we get to take control of what we want and what we don't want, and let us take the suffering away. Like, the desire for medication was really pushed by the feminist movement. And at that time, when this was happening, the main drug of choice was something that was called scopolamine. And not only was it a medication that knocked you out, but it also really disconnected you from the memory of that experience. And so you look into the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, and the majority of women were underneath this medication, which means that they were basically restrained to a bed, and their babies were 60% on average was how many times babies were drug out of their mom's vaginas with forceps. 60% of the population was drug out by forceps, and then their moms were still under these medications. So what ended up happening was the doctors had no place to put them. They couldn't go into the arms of their mothers, and so they were placed into the arms of the nurses that were standing by, and then these babies went to the nurseries. You know, any typical, stereotypical 1950s movie was the dads in the hospital lobby smoking their cigars in a nursery with the window and, you know, 15, 20 babies behind the window. And it's like, what? How did we move that far away that fast? That's a very fast time, like in the blip of human evolution. That time frame is very, very fast. And so you even look at when we go back to where cutting the cord came from and the invention of cord clamping. That's something I always talk about because the cord comes when the baby comes out, the cord is pulsating. And one of the first things that anybody does, you look at any movie, any TV show, it's like, cut the cord, find scissors, cut the cord. And it's like, wait a second. The whole reason that we started clamping the cord is because these moms were drugged out of their brains. And if the doctor cut the cord in that time that was still pulsating, then they would have a hose of blood that was spraying the room. So we ended up creating some invention of a plastic clamp to stick on the cord to stop the flow of the blood going to the baby anyways. Like these are interventions that actually cause problems. We know that, you know, something like that's as simple as a cord clamp, the baby's getting anywhere 25 to 30% less of their blood volume at birth because of that. But it was an intervention caused because of the separation of the baby needing to go to a nurse into a nursery. And so we travel through then, you know, typically the Lamaze movement created a shift within women saying like, I don't want to be drugged anymore. I don't want to hear the stories that my mom had of me being born. And, you know, the breathing movement and, you know, like using our breath and having coaches. And there was a resurgence of natural birth that started in the 1970s. And that was Ina Mae Gaskin, who's a famous midwife that lives in Tennessee, was in San Francisco. I think they were actually at UC Berkeley with her husband, Stephen Gaskin. And they had all these followers for his spirituality of cannabis. And they all caravanned across the United States to create a commune. And on this caravan across the United States, all of these women started giving birth and nobody had any formal medical training. God forbid, you know, how dare you give birth without formal medical training? And so there was a handful of women that had some, you know, textbooks about birth and they started, you know, delivering all these babies on the side of the road in these caravans. And when we had this resurgence, it was also during the time of, anti-war, anti-Vietnam push. That people were coming in this psychedelic, mind expansive way, and so it carried over, and then it kind of just got sunk back into like, come and save me from my body. I'm a victim to my body, and cut me open and take my baby out. So it's you know, this pendulum swing that we have, and like I said, the Ricky Lake movie was definitely a tidal wave of the pendulum swing to come back this other way now. But it's been really interesting to dig through the history of birth because, again, it's just a blip of time. Throughout all of our evolution, we've given birth at home. We've given birth with midwives. We've given birth in caves with our husbands standing guard to lions coming in. And now the lions in the room are men having to stand up and advocate for any of these, interventions that are happening to their wives, and men hold the charge for that. So they're in control. They try to be in control of protecting their wives. And I feel like when you talk to men, it's such an important piece because you actually hear how scary it is that they had to be the defender in those spaces. And they had to witness things that were done to their wife that any other circumstance or situation, if you moved them out of the hospital walls, that man would have beat the crap out of the doctor, you know? So it's quite an interesting evolutionary piece to where we're at right now in 2024. But I really do feel like the tides are shifting and people are questioning everything with the distrust in the Western medical system that we have right now.
Yeah, I definitely think that they overplayed their hand in COVID, and there was things that people were seeing and experiencing that weren't making sense to the marketing messages that people were receiving from public health and pharma and government, which there was really no delineation between those three things during the pandemic. They were all working for pharma. And I used to want to protect people from that reality, like, so I didn't get too much pushback. But I'm like, everything that I've said is documented on the podcast, and I haven't been wrong about anything. And I don't say that from a place of like, haha, I'm right. I'm sad that I was right about a lot of it because, you know, but the positive side to it is that, you know, people are actually asking questions and saying like, you know, the latest adoption of the most recent bivalent booster is like somewhere under
10%. Yeah. Last I read it was 7 to 9%.
Right. So people's choices are reflecting their trust. Whether they publicly are having these conversations, they're not walking into the pharmacies and getting the shots. The same people who have got 8 or 9 or whatever, and that's fine. I don't care people's choices. That's up to them. Yeah. It's just what has happened is the level of distrust that's been created has now caused it so people are not getting other interventions. Mm-hmm. Now, it's making people ask a lot of questions. I would have not dove deeper into all these subjects of vaccination on every level of, I wouldn't have dove into any of them unless I had to. And, yeah. You know, when you explore the impact that this has on mother, because you were saying the births, what were those births called when they were in the, like on the
Twilight
thing where they, Twilight birth?
Twilight sleep is what the anesthetic.
Twilight sleep. And there was a lot of pushback from that because women had experienced things like abuse and would have nightmares about what had happened, right? Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, they were literally restrained to the bed because they were still wild and raw and vulnerable and experiencing birth, but they didn't have any recollection of it and they were passed out. And so the only thing to do with these women was tie them to bed. Now, imagine what that was like if you were in a labor and delivery ward with 20 women that were writhing around and thrashing on a bed. Of course, they were going to get treated like shit. You know,
You're not going to remember it, right?
They're not going to remember it, but they did and they do. And it's, you go to dementia units and these women will give you full stories about their births. I mean, like we remember our births, that these are huge rites of passage. And so it's just such a shame that that's what we had to come from. But it's, you know, what you just said with the latest booster, you know, whatever the statistic is, I read 7 and 9 under 10%. 2 years ago, 70% of the world had the vaccine. So for us to go from 70% of the world to having had the COVID vaccine to now only 7 to 10% of everybody getting it, like that's huge.
Yeah,
that's massive. That's a huge percentage of people that are questioning everything. And I think that when we look at, I call it the Great Awakening. I think it was one of the greatest gifts that we had for civilization because the most profitable industry there is big farm, way above the war, especially now. And so, you know, it's like the people, we, the people going up against a monster, a dragon, and people are becoming aware and awake to it. And so I feel like, again, going back to being storytellers, like when women were having these experiences and talking about it, it's the same sort of thing that's happening that we're witnessing right now. Like, I don't want that experience. Like, that's why Lamaze was created. That's why there was these natural birth units that were created. That's why there was caravans of women going across the United States to seek something different that was happening within their own hometowns.
Well, trusting that the body actually knows that it's been designed to do that. Like when I learned that you don't really even push till the very end, I was like, what? Everything I see in the movies is like, push, you know, and just recognizing that the body contracts, that's what the contractions are, is the ushering of moving. And the baby works with mom and the baby's head takes a crazy shape to make its way out. And it's like all these things that I learned. And what do you think is the impact? And culturally, what do you see as maybe some of the ways that we're witnessing the cost of these high level of intervention births and the impact that has on people in terms of their ability to relate as adults?
So what we're focused around right now within birth is technology, right? I'm going to put my phone up here. And for those listeners that aren't watching, like, hello, what are we the culture of right now? Complete disconnection, disassociation. Everybody's zombies staring at their phones. You know, it's creating a disconnect where what we're attaching to is technology. You know, we have all the machines that ping and we have these babies that get put in these little bassinets, and I'm not saying all babies, the majority of babies do get to go home, you know, 2 days after mom gives birth, but we're reliant on all this technology. Like, in order to leave the hospital, the baby has to sit in its car seat for a certain length of time and make sure that they passed this heart screening and all of these things that really just consist of technology proving to the parents that they're okay. Where do we get a step back and realize that we have these innate, perfect design bodies that are actually here to take care of us? You know, like the concept of even just our immune systems. Like, you know, I had somebody text me yesterday and they were asking me about all the different supplements that they were being recommended for their babies. And it's like, my reply was not yes or no. I always say I'm neutral, but I just want to ask you, did your great cave grandma give her babies those drops of supplementations in the cave? No, they were out in the sun. Their babies were tied to their backs as they walked down the paths to get water, as they collected firewood for the fire at night. The soil was a lot more nutrient rich back then, but, you know, breast milk is one of the best things that we can give our babies for development. And not to knock people that can't breastfeed, you know, this cancel culture is so vicious with, you know, making sure that everybody is included. But like, yes, the most important thing that you can do as a piece of health for your baby is ensure that you can protect breastfeeding. If you can't protect breastfeeding, get your child some donor breast milk. You know, like there's so many options out there. And, you know, you go back to the great grandma wisdom. And that's what I always say. I feel like my calling here is to awaken the remembering within family structures, within women, within men, to remember that our innate grandmother wisdom is one of the most important things that we have for our future. Because at some point, some of these servers are going to crash and burn, and we're going to end up in a world where, you know, who know, what if our grid goes down? What are we going to do in these situations? We have to come back to the knowing and the remembering that we really have everything that we need within ourselves. And that's a huge paradigm shift from what's happening right now within current culture. And I, you know, jokingly say that the midwives are going to be the ones to forge the future if something like that were to happen, because we're the ones that do things without so much technology and trust the body so much. So it's an interesting time to be here. And it's also so beautiful. Like I said, it's this awakening period and people are really questioning things and recognizing what's possible within ourselves and asking questions and not having doctors be God anymore.
Are you feeling stuck? Whether it's just trying to figure out who you are and what you actually want from life, or you're healing from a breakup, or maybe you're trying to find your person in the dating landscape, or you're trying to get clarity if your person is actually your person, the Create the Love community is for you. In the community, you'll find other people who are navigating similar experiences, who have high standards and are going to hold you accountable to these new high standards that you're creating. Plus, you get access to a ton of valuable material, like monthly content that's themed and you get to work on through calls with me and your community. You get fun monthly challenges that we do as a group to help us grow together. And you also get access to a library of my content that you can search by topic, as well as access to all my Create the Love courses, which are no longer available for sale outside of my community. So you get all of this in a beautifully packaged community experience that is easy to navigate. If this sounds like something you want to be part of, go to markgroves.com/community and join us. I can't wait to see you there.
Yeah, when I was a rep, it was really interesting because before I was a rep, actually, I should say that we were all taught culturally that the ultimate achievement is to be a physician or a lawyer. And when I started to work with physicians, which I grew up around physicians, my dad did heart research, so I grew up around really incredible, they were almost all cardiologists. And then when I became a rep, I recognized that physicians were not God and it wasn't the ultimate human achievement, and that some of them were actually really unkind and some of them lacked ethics. And it's interesting that we just perceive that because someone is a priest, they are just innately highly ethical, or someone is a doctor, they're innately highly ethical. And of course, there are ethical versions of all those things, but there are also ones that are not. And no matter where we go, we have humans, and humans have shadow sides. And to look at how much they industrialized and monetized a process that is innately natural is just, to me, I'm like, wow, brilliant business strategy. Like, teach people that it doesn't work unless we intervene. And here's all the things we're going to charge you for. And if you don't use these things, it's child abuse or, you know, it's not the appropriate way. So now you're at fault for not saying yes to the things we told you to. It's using fear to manipulate behavior and create profit, which
sounds familiar, right?
Yeah.
But you look back to like Rockefeller even, and the beginning of 1900s is when he realized that the petroleum industry could take over the pharmaceutical company. And you know, right around that time is when they also, well, they still do monopolize the newspaper, the media. And so in the media, there were full page ads having smear campaigns against midwives. You know, go back 600 years prior to the witch hunt, it was like another modern day witch hunt. And, you know, it was like midwives are dirty and unclean. And why would you want this lay midwife attending your birth when you could be at this fancy hospital? And right around that time when birth was being brought to the hospital, we had something called childbed fever. And what childbed fever was is we didn't realize we had to wash our hands before we went and did vaginal exams and moved from woman to woman. And so these women were dying at preposterous rates of infection. So simple, wash your hands. I promise you the midwives weren't doing that. You know, the midwives had the recollection of all the herbs in their community, and they were, if not, they didn't have running water, they were finding some sort of antiseptic plants to make sure that things were clean as they welcomed these babies. And we didn't have these mass hospitals where we were moving from woman to woman. And so it's so interesting because it still happens. You know, like just recently I did a pretty big podcast, and if you listen to the 2-hour podcast, it's like the most like, here are your options, here are your choices. I don't care what you do. You can give birth in the backyard with a deer watching you, or you can schedule your C-section. But without you having choice, then you're going in as uninformed. And everything that I read statistically was, you know, from a study that was on my phone. And I had a bunch of text messages just recently from friends of a video that was posted that by an OBGYN that was on TikTok and Instagram. And it was literally my face and this OBGYN talking over me with just saying, like, how can we trust this lay midwife? And, you know, these are the basic bare minimum requirements of midwifery. And, you know, I replied and said, I'm not watching it. It's just a modern day witch hunt. I don't need to expose myself to that. But it still happens. But the whole point of it is that it still happens. And so, you know, if we actually recognize that these big fancy degrees don't really mean much in the grand scheme of life. Now, do I want the highest board certified cardiologist to operate on my dad if he needs heart surgery? Yes, of course. But I don't want a neonatologist to babysit my toddler. You know,
right.
So it, you know, we as humans get to really take a step back and decipher and realize that the Western medical system is the matrix. And if we pull ourselves out of that matrix, then we really get a step into our own autonomy. And it's not that we have to be completely separated from it, but when we stand in our own autonomy, you know, one of the things I always say to someone that comes in for a consult is the most important thing that you know is that I want you to know that you know your body above and beyond anybody else. You are the master of your body. I will be your Sherpa and I will help you go up this mountain that we'll climb together, because I've climbed this mountain quite a few times with other women. But if at any point your intuition tells you something different, you have to communicate that with me. I want you fully embodied. I want you in your full sovereignty within your experience, because that's the most empowering gift I could give to anybody on this planet, is to have their full autonomy.
And if they learn that through the process of birth or however we learn it, you know, whenever we need to advocate for ourselves, and the way to do that is to get education. But I think, you know, two things. One, if we look at that, you know, the framework of culture today is like, well, if you criticize the degree that a physician, if you criticize that it sometimes is not valid in certain circumstances, or there's sometimes deceptive information or not accurate information, then it means you reject all of medicine. And mm-hmm. what you're saying, which I love, is that, no, that's not what's true. But all we have to do is look at history and we go, okay, well, thalidomide, was recommended by physicians, mm-hmm. and that caused a shitstorm. What about the sleep training? That was recommended by physicians, still is recommended.
It still is, yeah.
Right. So clearly there are times when the things that are recommended are not true. That now puts into question so many things, right? Now we at least live in a world where reality is reality, and sometimes these things that we hold as sacred are actually not, right? That we hold as like the God we should be worshiping. And that can be destabilizing, because now we go, well, if that's not true, what's true? And I think that's where we can come back to traditional knowledge, traditional information that has run through the millennia of humans, you know. And whenever I look at someone like the OBGYN that you're sharing, I'm always fascinated by that. If we were to just be curious about the structure of that training, I've had Dr. Nathan Riley on, who, you know, he's such an advocate for women and stepping into their power and birth being a sacred process, and the physician be an observer and available for emergencies. And that difference of his curiosity, his trust, all that kind of stuff. But of course, the people who benefit from a system will fight to maintain a system. And I remember hearing this environment, I forget his name, I wish I could remember, but he said, if you get your food and everything from a grocery store, then you'll fight to the death to protect the system that gets the food to the grocery store. If you get your food from a stream and your water from a stream, you'll fight to the death to protect the stream. And I think this is very true of like, if you benefit from something, even unconsciously, you will want that system to maintain its power so that you maintain quote unquote safety and security, maybe pay your rent, whatever it is. And I think with the how as humans do we hold the complexity that some things are beneficial and some things cause harm and some things are beneficial and some things cause harm? It seems like we have wanted to make it so the world is so binary that it's predictive and safe, when it's really actually just being deceptive to ourselves. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have this conversation quite frequently, because I think if you ask the true like fear that women have moving into birth, I think the main thing that you'll actually hear is death. Like, they have fear of them dying, or they have fear of their babies dying. And it's, who knows if it's from what they see on TV and all the fear that's cast. But I feel like throughout time, like, we can definitely say that there were stories that were told through, you know, of moms losing babies. I mean, back then there were very large families. And so there is this kind of, you know, cellular fear that we carry forward. And I always say the most important thing that we can do as humans is to actually meet our fear head on, right? Like, to look it in the eye, to have it be the jaguar in the room, and to say, like, there is inherent fear with every single thing that we do. We as humans are raw. We as humans are messy. And we're going to die. It's the most guaranteed part of life that we have. We're born and we die. And so if we take a step back and stop living so much in fear and start to recognize the inherent risk with everything, we know that there's risk of getting in a car and driving down the street. So where does the inherent risk lie within each certain situation? And once we address that, I feel like what happens is we get to stand more in our power, because there's not a system of fear that's controlling us. I mean, we know how impactful and persuasive fear can be. It completely destroyed families and, you know, units throughout the whole world in front of our eyes. And I still know friends that don't talk to their families post-COVID because of there was so much deception that happened within their fear campaigns within the family unit. And so I think that it's so pertinent that you even bring it up, because it's such an important piece for us to acknowledge and accept and look at and recognize that, like, we don't get to sit in the corner of our little safety nets. Like, we as humans get to have these raw, vulnerable experiences, and we get to have them with each other. So let's stop being so fearful and really, like, be humans in this human experience for such a short time that we're here.
Yeah, let's walk right into it, you know. And when we were giving birth, Kylie was in labor for a long time. I think she did 32 hours or something, 34 hours of labor.
And which pushed. Is normal for first-time moms.
Yeah, and she pushed for a long time. I want to say like 5 or 6 hours. Well, but
bless your midwives.
Seriously. Yeah. And I remember it being like hour 15 or 16. And, you know, I hadn't slept at all either, although I don't know how she was doing it. I was just sitting there watching her, and like she'd have her contractions and then she'd be like making jokes and present. And then, and she's like, how are you? I'm like, how am I? Like, don't worry about me. We're good. And I remember, though, thinking to myself, this story does end with a birth or not. I don't know how it ends. And actually being in this tension is just part of it. Like, and what you were saying about being with the possibility of death, that was definitely something that I was like, it's there. It's there. It's palatable because the grittiness of the human, the messiness of the birth, all of it is actually what being a human is. And there's something so beautiful about that because it's actually like, it's almost like the draw that we currently are really, you know, it's like a meme that goes viral about like my dream guy is someone who says I want to farm and cows too, you know, or like, I just want to buy land with my friends and start a commune or a cult, whatever. There's a fine line, but I don't think that's by accident because it's the same thing as the craving for birth. It's the same thing as hugging trees. It's the same thing as like, I think there is an analog revolution upon us because our nervous systems are so fried from technology. And I might be projecting a bit too there because I have felt that way. So I've left Instagram and that feels like, oh, I'm no longer, I'm missing things on, I'm not at all. But the perception is like, well, how will you catch up with friends? I'm like, we could call each other. That would work. Like, let's throw back Thursday and call someone on a phone. But yeah, it seems to be like there is a longing back to nature and back to what is natural.
There has to be. I mean, the first iPhone was invented in 2008. That's not that long ago. You know, we have this new generation. My son was born in 2009. He's never known a world without an iPhone, right? And not that he had it as a child, but he sure has it now at 15 years old, and much to my dismay. But it's part of this, what's, you know, being dubbed the generation of anxiety, which is also being dubbed Generation Alpha. And these kids give no shits. You know, we're moving away from, again, this collective coming back to consciousness of connecting with other humans, but this new generation of kids is completely dependent. Like, they don't even text anymore. Everything's on Snapchat. You don't, like, texting is not cool. And so you have to have these apps within apps where they have access to drug dealers and firework people. Wild. And, you know, and it's, it, and you keep on hearing like, well, they turned out fine, but what's fine anymore? You know, like, where are we at within the evolutionary process? You brought up sleep training. That's such a pet peeve of mine. And I always really will talk out about that, you know, all over, but specifically to my clients. And it's like, you look at the cortisol levels of these babies after they stop crying, and it's exactly the same as when they cried themselves to sleep for the first 3 to 4 nights. You look at the population of the United States, and 30% of the adults have insomnia. How are we supposed to say that everybody's fine? You know, that's not fine. You know, our nervous systems are so out of whack. And so, yes, coming back to that, like, communal living and the structure of being able to have that face-to-face connection, as I say this, looking at you through a computer screen, you know, like, it's something that I know that I yearn for. You know, during COVID, I did one of the things where I left the country and bought 2 acres on another part of the, you know, world, just to get away and know that I had a safe place to be with my family if I needed to. And I it'll be really interesting. I wonder if we'll see it in our lifetimes where we have a resurgence of the generation that was born post iPhone to come back to the calling of sitting around the fire and being in communion with each other.
I think it will, because if you look, the younger generations don't drink as much.
Yep.
You know, unfortunately, they don't have as much sex. And yeah. I think that's because of pornography and the dopamine Right. All the different things a phone offers. I think it's inhibited a lot of neurodevelopment and attachment connection. You know, I remember seeing a psychologist do a talk on the impact of technology. God, it would be like 10 years ago I saw this talk. And he was talking about how, you know, children learn empathy through witnessing their parents and people interact. So they see the modeling of emotion in facial expression and body language, and that's how they learn it themselves. But when their face is in an iPad or the parents are, they are not witnessing that. And so what is, you know, how we might define someone who has narcissistic personality disorder is someone who really lives and lacks empathy. And so are we also through the creation of these social media platforms, which really are as about, they can be as about celebratory of self as possible, are we creating the perfect circumstances for like rampant raging narcissists? Probably. And we're also rewarding the virtue signaling, which really I've been thinking a lot about that at being really is covert narcissism. So we have these two extremes that are very self-indulgent in both ways that people source power. And it's like, is it often correlated? I think about this in the US. What is the minimum mat leave in the US? Is it like 6 weeks?
6 weeks is what I can legally write someone off for. So they get 4 weeks before the baby's born and then 6 weeks afterwards. Six weeks.
And then you think of how long a child developmentally actually needs to be on mothers and fathers and communities, but especially moms, skin to skin, not co-sleeping. And again, there are obviously circumstances and things where these technologies and choices are required. And that's not evidence of a problem in the person who's choosing it, but rather the constructs of our culture that do not support the mother and father so that they do have the ability to maintain what might be reasonable mental health through these very challenging times of raising a child.
Yeah. You know, I have a dear friend that lives in Bali and I spent some time with her a couple years ago and those kids don't even touch the floor. Like they're not touching the floor. You read certain things that says 6 months and certain things that say 3 months, but they're literally held by members of the community all the time until that they feel that they're able to touch the floor. So what does that mean? They're not in buckets, as I call them, you know, car seats or bouncy chairs or swings. They're literally in a sling held by the mother or the father or the grandmother or members of the community. If you go to Bali, even with the technology boom that there is, every single day they're weaving baskets together as a family and making little devotion packets for their gratitude for, you know, the things that they're grateful for in their life. I think they make a minimum of 10 baskets a day and they place them throughout their houses and their villages for what they're grateful for. So they're on their motorbikes. And if your family owns a restaurant, it's on the cash register. They're on the path of, you know, that you walk on to your job. I mean, they're everywhere all over Bali. And I can't help but think that by the devotion that they have to these infants to be so attached and connected that it carries over into the devotion of their gratitude for every single thing in their life. There's no entitlement there. There's none of that. It's pure heart connection and gratitude for what they have.
How do you think for us who live in maybe more westernized cultures that we begin to or continue to deepen our connection to ourselves, be educated in the process of birth, and then how that might translate into our everyday life?
I think the most important thing is coming back to ourselves, right? Like actually spending time with ourselves. I we're so disconnected from just having quiet time because we have so many of these dopamine fixes within our phones. You don't even see people sitting at bus stops or on trains anymore that are just sitting in contemplation. Everybody's looking down at the screen. And so when we allow ourselves the opportunity, I mean, one of the greatest things I've ever done for my mental health is making sure that I call it my tithing to myself, is making making sure that I have a minimum of 60 minutes a day outside with myself. And I have a really beautiful beach trail by my house that I get a walk on. But no matter what, you know, rain or shine, I always try to show up. Obviously, if I'm at a birth, that's a little bit harder, but I'll go in the backyard at a birth, or I'll stand in wherever I can and just have that connection with myself, feel my internal rhythm, feel the rhythm of the earth and how I'm actually operating within the energy of the earth, and then my connection to everybody within it. Every morning I start the day by thanking. I try to incorporate that gratitude practice because I feel like it's such an important piece for us to come back to this remembering. Because if we have that remembering, then we're going to have the innate knowing that all things are possible and that we will be able to question things that we're told outside of what the normal paradigm is. And when we question things that we're told outside of the normal paradigm, then we kind of start to create a new earth, right? Like where we start to create this new system of how we operate within each other and move away from that generation of narcissism and move back into the communal space that we keep talking about.
What do you think women need to hear in terms of not just stepping into birth, but stepping into self and what that process might look like or sound like?
It's intuition. It's intuition. We have so much of this internal knowing within ourselves, and it's been, you know, quieted so many times. We always are told to not trust ourselves and to not trust. We trust the experts, trust the science. And really what it is when we come back to trusting our intuition, and not just trusting our intuition, but like fully leaning into like the knowing, the embodiment of what is right for us. Because what's right for me might be completely different than what's right for somebody else. How I raise my baby and tend to my baby's cry is going to be completely different to somebody else's baby. It's what we know for ourselves and our immediate family. And so I encourage everybody that's listening, and if you're a man listening, I encourage you to go home and have these conversations with your partner, because if a woman comes back to inherently trusting that intuition, I feel like the paradigm of trusting anything but ourselves would crumble to the ground. It's such an important piece to our future.
Oh man, amen to that. And for those people listening, watching, who want to dive deeper into information that you share, into preparing themselves for birth, what do you recommend?
Oh, there's so many different things out there now. I feel like, you know, one of the things that 2020 did is that there's a lot of good quality content that moved online. And so, you know, you really have to kind of like sift through, but there's some really good programs out there that bring you back to, you know, giving you really good information. And, you know, the courses, like there's courses like Pain-Free Birth and hypnobirthing. And if you're a Christian and saying hypnobirthing is ungodly, there's Christian hypnobirthing. And there, you know, there's all these different options that you have. But I feel like once you start to decipher through the information that's presented to you in an actual benefit risk alternative way, that you're able to make the decisions that are, you know, the most impactful for your families. I'm creating courses right now. My courses are called The Remembering, and it's really just bringing people back to their knowing of what is right and what's wrong. And again, what's right for me, right, might be wrong for somebody else, but it's having the authority to make that decision of what's right for you.
Man, I think we are in the perfect time for all of this, you know,
yeah,
that we have this opportunity to, you know, I love that you use the term remembering, because this is on some level things that you get taught, but it really is about permission, might be the wrong word, but it's almost like we need to hear someone like, hey, that feeling you have, explore it, learn how to trust yourself. And the way to do that is to actually get the information that you need to be able to make a solid decision, have community around you and people who will stand at your side. And for people giving birth, is the recommendation to get educated in that space, get a midwife or doula. I don't know that what's the difference between those.
Yeah, the difference between a midwife and a doula. So a midwife is there not just for physical and emotional support, which is what the doula is there for. The midwife is also there for the whole pregnancy. So I serve women, you know, throughout all of prenatal care into her labor and birth, and then postpartum and beyond. And you know, doulas typically meet with you like two or three times, and then are there for you for the birth, for physical and emotional emotional support, and then also meet with you like once or twice after the birth. But yeah, you know, find the information online. It's all there. You don't have to look hard for it. You know, like contact the local midwives and doulas in your area. And even if you don't end up using a midwife, you'll be able to get a lot of resources from midwives about this information. And one of the things, you know, that I like to encourage is that I talk so much about this intuition piece, and it's so hard for people sometimes to even recognize what their intuition is. And so I have a little simple exercise that anybody that's listening could try. It's simply just saying your name. Like, my name is Lindsay. How does that feel within your body? What does that feel like? Where do you feel the truth within your body? And then saying something like, my name is Mark. Like, I know my name isn't Mark. It doesn't reside within my body. I feel a tightening within my body. It's not who I am. And so just those little things that you can start to do to really like feel where it feels right for you in your body and where it doesn't feel right within your body, those are going to be your compass throughout the rest of your life. You know, if you lean into that and realize that that compass is always there for you, it's one of the most important things that you can do.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your fire, your wisdom, your experience, and what you've learned in the birthing space for the over the last 20 years, which is incredible. Witnessed thousands of births and been side by side with thousands of women. That's incredible. And fathers too, and communities. And for people listening, where can they find more of you and all the info?
So the best place to find me is at my website, which is www.theremembering.com. And I just want to leave you guys with one little lasting image that you have. And so one of the things that we're always taught within birth is that we need to dilate to 10, right? Like, the dilation is everybody's fixated on this number. And so really and truthfully, what you think about is, if we take away these numbers and all of these things and we just move it into expansion, I want you to think that there's four things that actually have to dilate in order for you to have a baby. And of course, the one that we all know is the cervix. And the cervix is this beautiful little organ within the female body that opens to 10 and the baby moves down and through. But I also like to have you think about your perineum, your vagina, as this gateway, this door that opens. And that also has to dilate, which means that you have to surrender. But two of the most important things that we have to dilate in order for us to step into parenthood, and even if you're a parent, you know, you're having your two or three children later on, you're still never going to have the experience of being in that moment to birth yourself into parenthood for that child. So each birth you have is an expansion into parenting that child. And so the most important things that also have to dilate are your heart and your mind. And so as we allow our hearts to open, and I say our hearts need to dilate and open to the edges of the universe to go out and to collect our babies and bring them back into our space. And then the mind is just having that connection with pure divinity and allowing ourselves to be in the space of that holiness and allowing ourselves to fully surrender. And if we have those four things in place, there's so much that can happen. Even if you choose to give birth in the walls of the hospital, there's so much sacredness that comes through that time. So just remember that it's not just these numbers that we're looking for. And if we step into this space of expanding our minds and our hearts, our cervixes, and then that door to the heavens, that's where all the magic happens.
To trust and return to that miracle that is birth. And it is such a miracle. The portal into this world. Like,
it is.
Are you kidding me? That's incredible.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, thank you for empowering women to step more fully into that.
Thank you, Mark.